Hare Krishna. So today is Sri Ram Navami, the most auspicious and probably one of the most glorious days of the appearance of the Personality of Godhead anywhere in the universe. I chose one verse that I came across just this morning, actually, from the second canto. This is chapter 7. Text 23, Scheduled Incarnations. It describes the Lord and some of his pastimes within his mission. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Due to His causeless mercy upon all living beings within the universe, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, along with His plenary extensions, appeared in the family of Maharaj Vikshvaku as the Lord of His internal potency, Sita. Under the order of His father, Maharaj Dasarath, He entered the forest and lived there for considerable years with His wife and younger brother. Ravana, who was very materially powerful with 10 heads on his shoulders, committed a great offense against Him and was thus ultimately vanquished. Purport. Lord Ram is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and His brothers named Bharat, Lakshman, and Shatrughna are His plenary expansions. All four brothers are Vishnu Tattva and were never ordinary human beings. There are many unscrupulous and ignorant commentators on Ramayana who present the younger brothers of Lord Ramachandra as ordinary living entities. But here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the most authentic scripture on the science of God, it is clearly stated that His brothers and His plenary expansions are His plenary expansions. Originally, Lord Ramachandra is the incarnation of Vasudeva. Lakshmana is the incarnation of Sankarsana. Bharat is the incarnation of Pradyumna, and Shatrughna is the incarnation of Aniruddha. They are expansions of the Personality of Godhead. Lakshmiji, Sita, is the internal potency of the Lord and is neither an ordinary woman nor the external potency incarnation of Durga. Durga is the external potency of the Lord and she is associated with Lord Shiva. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 4:7, the Lord appears when there are discrepancies in the discharge of factual religion. Lord Ramachandra also appeared under the same circumstances, accompanied by His brothers, or expansions of the Lord's internal potency, and by Lakshmiji Sita Devi. Lord Ramachandra was ordered by His father Maharaj Dasarath to leave home for the forest under awkward circumstances, and the Lord, as the ideal son of His father, carried out the order, even on the occasion of His being declared the king of Ayodhya. One of His younger brothers, Lakshmiji, desired to go with Him, and so also His eternal wife, Sitaji, desired to go with Him. The Lord agreed to both of them, and altogether they entered the Dandakaranya forest to live there for 14 years. During their stay in the forest, there was some quarrel between Ramachandra and Ravana, and the latter kidnapped the Lord's wife, Sita. The quarrel ended in the vanquishing of the great powerful Ravana along with his kingdom and family. Sita is Lakshmidi, the goddess of fortune, but she is never to be enjoyed by any living being. She is meant for being worshipped by the living beings along with her husband Sri Ramachandra. A materialistic man like Ravana does not understand this great truth, but on the contrary, he wants to snatch Sita Dev from the custody of Ram and thus incur great miseries. The materialists who are after opulence and material prosperity may take lessons from the Ramayana that the policy of exploiting the nature of the Lord without acknowledging the supremacy of the Supreme Lord is the policy of Ravana. Ravana was very advanced materially, so much so that he turned his kingdom Lanka into pure gold, or full of material wealth. But because he did not recognize the supremacy of Lord Ramachandra and divide him by stealing his wife, Sita Dev, Ravana was killed and all his opulence and power were destroyed. Lord Ramachandra is the full incarnation with six opulences in full, and he is therefore mentioned in this verse as Kalesa, or master of all opulence. Om Agyan Timirandasya Gina Jana Salakaya Chaksu Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Stapti Tam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Mayam Dadanti Swam Padantikam Bandeham Shiguro Shriyuta Padagamalam Shigurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahaganat Raganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sarvadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Suti Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhischa Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnave Bhyo Namaho Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasari Gaura Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Srila Prabhupada in a very succinct way describes so many qualities, energies, and some of the activities of the Lord in this one purport. When the Lord appears in the material world, he comes for different reasons. And we hear that in the Bhagavad Gita, as mentioned in this verse, that he comes to reestablish religious principles and to eliminate those who are against religion or those who are irreligious, the demoniac, those who are actively working against the process of spirituality in the world. And it appears at that particular time in past history, as Prabhupada said, about 2 million years ago, this was the situation. But the Lord also comes in order to inspire his devotees in their devotional service, so much so that they increase their loving relationship with the Lord and surrender more and more in the Lord's loving service. But the Lord also, in his amazing pastimes, which are for his own pleasure, because when the Lord comes, he also wants to perform his activities, as Prabhupada explains in so many ways in the purports and his lectures, the Lord is always joyful. He's never struggling, misery, working hard, or has a difficult time with anything. For him, everything is easy. In fact, it's so easy, he doesn't do anything. He carries out everything simply by his energy. His energies are working automatically in order to fulfill his desires. So the Lord doesn't really have to appear in order to eliminate irreligion. But he does as part of his activities. But his main activity is to inspire his devotees. And in that inspiration, he's teaching so much. I think, at least this is my, what we say, philosophical speculation, out of all the incarnations of the Lord, Lord Ramachandra is teaching so many very powerful messages that are very relevant in our life today. So powerful that he's teaching the ideal in three main categories, what to speak of other subcategories. Here, Prabhupada mentions one of them, the ideal son. Ideal in the sense that we all know the story that it apparently seemed to be a complete unfair arrangement for him to go to the forest. Nobody wanted it. Nobody. There wasn't one person in Ayodhya who wanted that. But even Mantara, who seems to be the instrument that inspired this whole, what we say, intrigue of the Lord going to the forest, was covered over by the element of envy, so much so that she acted in a wrong way. And that unfolded a whole drama which led to the whole complete direction of this particular scenario. The Lord was meant to be the king of Ayodhya, to follow in the footsteps of his very powerful father, Dasarath Suta, who had ruled the kingdom for many thousands of years. And in that condemnation of the, what we say, the Lord taking the position of the throne, the Lord didn't protest. He didn't say, I'm supposed to be the king. I'm qualified to be the king. Everybody in the citizenry within Ayodhya wants me to be the king. There's nobody. And everything is looking in that direction. It was glorious. It was going to be the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, ruling the earth. Amazing. But what happened? It's amazing what happened. Is that his father, of course we know the story, had given his youngest wife, Kaikeyi, these benedictions. She had saved his life on the battlefield. And she asked, and he offered some benedictions to her. She said, I'll take them in due course of time. Now being polluted by her maidservant Mantara, her mind was completely changed. Her heart was, who she had such love and affection and admiration for Ramchandra. It said, Prabhupada mentioned, she loved Ramchandra even more than her own son. That was her affection. But that all changed. That all changed simply by hearing the enviousness of words spoken against Ram. And so much so she was influenced. The power of association, or bad association in this case. But the point here was that after reluctantly agreeing to these devious promises that she ordered him to fulfill, he turned to his son and he said, this is the situation. And Ram said, because you're my father, and because, you know, I worship you as my father, you are in all respects worshipable, righteous, I accept. He accepted it. He didn't say, well, you know, Dad, you're off. You know, you better, you know, take a little rest and see if maybe tomorrow you can really rethink the whole thing and come to the right conclusion. He didn't say that. He obeyed his parent in such a way that Prabhupada mentions here, he's the ideal son. We might take that principle that in the Shastras it says, to honor, to respect, and to worship superiors is a quality of advanced civilization. It's the quality of an advanced civilization. We see in today's world, where is that? It's lost due to what we say. We can say the effects of Kali Yuga, but what is that effects of Kali Yuga? Is that even those who are in a position of what we say, superiority, leadership, and have great responsibility, are not able to fulfill that responsibility. And so nobody accepts their direction, and the followers are just like the leaders. So that is all lost. Of course, there's some element of Vedic culture still left, and we still find that in certain places in the world where that element is still there. But the Lord wanted to teach that. that to obey the superiors is actually a very high religious principle. This is amazing when you think about it. What he had to do in order to fulfill that, he had to leave everything and accept a very, what we say, obscure position. In fact, no position, going into the forest just for 14 years and just somehow already existing there. But he did it. He obeyed that instruction so much so that I'll fast forward a little bit. This is mentioned by Prabhupada. When Sita was captured by Ravana, the Lord wanted to arrange an army to somehow fight along with him to recapture Sita Dev. He could have went back to Ayodhya and got all his armies. But he didn't, because he said, I'm not allowed in Ayodhya for 14 years. It's interesting. When someone, especially Kshatriyas, but in general, when someone gives their word, that word is like law. Nowadays, we don't see that. When someone says something, if it's convenient at the time when you're supposed to carry it out, then your promise will maybe be fulfilled. But if things change during due course of time, then what happens? We rethink the promise, and sometimes we use a little sophistry, a little mix in a little bit of truth with a little bit of circumstance, which is no longer the same anymore. And then we say, we change the whole thing around. I can't fulfill my desire. As a sannyasi who travels all the time, I get caught in that too, but then I've learned my lesson. Maharaj, can you come here to my place? It's only 5,000 miles away. We'll even pay for your ticket one way. The other way. So, and you know, if your heart is in the wrong, not wrong place, but in, if you're just overwhelmed by their desire to have you come, your heart sort of wants to say yes, and you say, okay, and then all of a sudden, 6 months later, when it's time to go, there's a big kirtan mail at the same time, or something. So I learned, at least I try to learn not to give promises anymore unless you can keep them. It's so hard, right? And I think life is like that. Even when we live from day to day, we have to make promises to be responsible for our duties within our family, within our society, even to our teachers in school, to our friends, even to ourselves. So, but Ramchandra taught, he was the epitome of the ideal son. It didn't matter what the consequences were. The vow, the promise was what we say, the word. Nothing could change that. And think about that. That's really amazing when you think about it, how powerful that is. So the Lord is teaching that one should obey superiors like that. And Prabhupada also says that when Prabhupada gave his first initiation, one of the first initiations at 26 Second Avenue, one young man at the time, Brahmananda, received the initiation from Srila Prabhupada. Of course, later he became Brahmananda Maharaj. And his mother was there. And right at the end of the ceremony, Prabhupada indicated to Brahmananda, now go over to your mother and pay your obeisances to your mother. He did it. He did it. Prabhupada wanted to teach the principle of honoring superiors, that we should honor parents, we should honor, of course we say we honor the guru, authorities. And that makes everything wonderful. Because even if there's something wrong, that will be adjusted by circumstance. So he was ideal in that. Another quality of his ideal character was he was the ideal leader. And people speak about Ram Raj, right? Let's bring in Ram Raj. And we see today's society, it's like Robin a Rule. It's everywhere. There's no leaders you can actually trust anymore. I think the last Vedic leader in the world was King, what was his name, from Nepal. He was a Nepalese leader. No, it was about 40 years ago he retired from office. He was still the Vedic king, something Chandra. But anyway, nowadays it's all, the leadership in the world is no longer qualified to lead. And therefore, the whole society is topsy-turvy. Ram taught that a leader should be beyond suspicion. There's a statement in the Srimad Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita that if you have a white cloth, and if you put one small drop of ink on that white cloth, it's noticeable. It's noticeable. That cloth is the analogy of the character. That one who is in a position of leadership, Mrs. Ram was teaching that, should be above suspicion, should be above criticism. So much so that we see when the Lord, after they had returned to Ayodhya, after everything was, again, what we say, ideal, Sita had returned to Ram, Lakshman was there, Hanuman, all among, Bibhishan had taken the throne of Lanka, and the Lord was now ruling the kingdom. He had this policy just to find out what people were saying about him. He wanted to always improve the quality of his leadership, to hear if anyone was having any problems or criticisms, and to hear maybe his what they were glorifying him about. So he would take incognito and go. So one day, we know the story, he was hearing one man chastising his wife, speaking quite loudly from within his house, and he was saying, I am not like Ram. Where were you last night? You were out all night, I don't know where you were, what you did, and now you're back, you want me to take you back? He was talking about what we say, the ideal principle of chastity within the family for a woman. Ram heard that. He was very thoughtful. He became grave. And he did something that was shocking. So shocking that it was not shocking. It was devastating. After all that effort, after all those battles, after all this 14 years in the forest, such intrigue, and Sita Devi, after she had come back, she was criticized by Ram for being impure. She proved her purity by entering the fire. We all know the story, how she came out. The fire god Agni was carrying, showed that she was never touched by Ravana. And Prabhupada says it's not possible for the materialist to touch the spiritual energy. She is pure spiritual energy. So that philosophical principle was proven by Sita Devi in the most amazing way. And now everything was nice, right? This one thing about the Ramayana, it's one calamity after another, right? Hanuman, he hears the Ramayana over and over again. He cries. He cries because it's such a sad affair. Look what happened at the end. After Ram heard that criticism, what did he do? He arranged for Lakshman to take Sita, who was pregnant at the time, out of Ayodhya and to the ashram of Valmiki Muni to stay there. Amazing. You might say, and he's criticized for that. People criticize him for that. Why did he do that? Sometimes devotees ask that question. Why? After all that, why? Why was this man, why was this man's statement so important that he would act in that way? But he was shown that kings should be above suspicion in all aspects. Even though we might say that person was acting, what we say, wrongly by criticizing Ram for that. But he did it. And what pain Lakshman had to go through. Lakshman had to drive the chariot with Sita in the chariot to take her to the ashram. And he didn't tell her. He told her, we're going on a little vacation. That's all. Because Ram instructed him. But then, when he was driving the chariot, this is nicely explained, his mind and his heart was overwhelmed with grief, thinking that I'm taking Sita away from Ram and out of Ayodhya. And he started to show emotions. He couldn't keep his emotions in. And Sita noticed that. She noticed that. And when she noticed that, she realized, Lakshman, am I coming back? She could understand. And Lakshman couldn't answer. Couldn't answer. Says this is one of the reasons, there was others, why Lakshman, the younger brother of Ram, who was also Balaram, come again, why he appeared as the older brother. Because it says that in the Vedic culture, younger brother is obeyed, or one has to listen to older brother. So in this case, he was the younger brother, so he had to follow. So, but it was so much pain for him to follow that he thought, next incarnation, I'm not going through this. This is too much. So he became Nityananda and Balaram, are both in the incarnations, the older brother. But the Lord did that, this to sow the ideal king. So, and this is really quite extraordinary. That was one of the things. And he followed that perfectly. And people glorify Ram for that. They glorify Ram for that. He was also the ideal husband. And this was his ekapatni. What was the ideal husband? This is a touchy subject. Ideal husband and ideal wife, right? Every time I talk about this, I start seeing the devotees making faces, but because they think it's not possible. It's the impossible. So Sita was the ideal wife. What was her ideal character? It says that Patni Dharma means to follow the husband no matter what. She did. When it was time to go to the forest, Ram was ready to go. Lakshman was eager to go. Ram had no problem with Lakshman coming. But when Sita wanted to come, he was totally against it. He said, you're accustomed to luxury. You live in a palace. You have nice food. You have maid servants, soft beds. Everything is nice. Nice clothes. You're a princess. Do you know what the forest is like? It's cold, dark. There's rakshasas there. It's very dangerous. You have to sleep on the ground. You have to eat roots, fruits, berries, and things that are very, things you're not accustomed to. You'll starve. You'll die. She wasn't convinced. She said, and this is interesting, she said, at least this is a paraphrase, she said that Ayodhya without you is the forest, and the forest with you is Ayodhya. She was so determined to stay with Ram that it was to her, death would have been better than separation. She followed that ideally. But you look at the whole thing. One of the messages of the Ramayana is, never take your wife to the forest. It's not easy. You know, because, you know, it's just the way things are. There's not too many, you know, nice things in the forest. There's nothing, really. It's just what it is. And therefore, Ram had to really execute the principle of pati dharma by giving protection to Sita in so many different circumstances, right? When Suparnaka came and she saw Ram, when she saw Ram, she was a hideous monster. She was the younger sister of Ravana. She changed her form into this beautiful girl. And she came. She made proposals to Ram. Ram said, I'm sorry. I'm married. I only take one wife. This is my vow. Ekapatni. She was persistent. And then Ram said to her, well, actually, you know, my brother, he needs a wife. Lakshman. So why don't you, I think he's actually more qualified. So go to him. So she did. And Lakshman was also thinking what to say to her. And then he came up with a really good argument. He said, actually, I'm the servant of my brother, Ram. And if you become my wife, you'll be second class. So it's better, since you're such a qualified lady. He was giving her so many nice, you know, glorifications, just to make her, you know, a little illusioned about what was about to happen. And he said, actually, go back to Ram and try again. And then Ram said, this is my wife, I can't. And then Suparnaka got so angry that she charged at Sita Dev. She wanted to kill Sita. And then Ram acted fast, and he looked at Lakshman and said, do something. And Lakshman took his arrow and just gave her what they call a facelift, something like that. Something. It was free, too. You didn't have to pay for it. It was permanent. You wouldn't have to go back for any alterations. It was, he did a great job. Nasik, right? The cut nose. And of course, also she had an ear trim at the same time. It's like, you know, she got her ears pierced, right? For free. So that was Lakshman. And this is what Ram had to go through in order to give protection to his wife. He had such a difficulty. And we know the story. They were in the forest for 13 years. 13 years. It was only one more year left. And after that, you know, then Ravana found out about Sita. And he was determined to capture Sita. So his plan was, I'm jumping from Leela to Leela. I hope you don't mind. Because they're all these leelas are so full of spiritual messages and very practical things that we can learn. Here's where Sita looks very, what we say, unpopular. It looks like she blew it, right? In this particular leela. She's the goddess of fortune. She is in control of all the opulences, right? She manifests the opulence. And she controls the opulences. But when Ravana wanted to capture Sita, he went to one demon who already was on the unemployment list. His name was Maricha. He had retired from his demoniac activities. He was collecting unemployment. And so he was just taking it easy, ready to finish his life in a very peaceful way. Ravana came to him and said, I got some seva for you. He said, "Oh, what's that?" He said, "Well, there's this person, Ram." When he heard the word Ram, any word starting with R, and he would have an epileptic fit. He would just go crazy. He said, "Forget it." He shot an arrow, knocked me into the 800 miles into the ocean. I'm finished. I'm not going to mess with him. Ravana was persistent. Ravana is the personification of lust. Each of the six incarnations of Jaya and Vijaya represents one of the qualities, or one of the demoniac qualities: lust, anger, greed, illusion, pride, and envy. Ravana was lust personified. He had so much. He had more than he could possibly enjoy for many lifetimes. But he's teaching us in a negative way just what it's like, that when you have so much but you're not Krishna conscious, you're never satisfied. He was never satisfied. Therefore, he wanted more and more and more. That's the nature of lust. In the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, lust is characterized as a fire-eating demon. And the more fuel you put onto the fire, the more the fire burns. The amazing thing about putting fuel on the fire is that the initial placement of the fuel onto the fire makes the fire go down. So it's synonymous or analogous to satisfying lust. When we try to satisfy lust, the immediate experience is, oh, it's nice. But that's so fleeting and so insignificant that it returns. And each time the fire burns greater. So Ravana was like that. He had so much. Not only did he have so much, he had so much in the best possible way. Followers, chaste lady, Mandodari, she was considered to be as glorious as Sita herself. She's glorified as one of the great women in history, Mandodari, the wife of Ravana. Chaste, faithful, qualified in so many ways, ideal. Still, he wasn't satisfied. So he made this plan. He threatened Maricha that if you don't do it, I'm going to kill you. Put it right, there was no diplomacy in it. Either you do it or you're finished. So Maricha thought, well, if I'm killed by you, I don't know what's going to happen. But if I'm killed by Ram, at least I'll get some benefit. So he decided to go that way. So he had the mystic power to change himself into this beautiful and very unusual looking deer that it was nothing like anyone had ever seen before. And he came before Sita. And he was jumping around and playing, and she saw it, and she was so attracted. And immediately she said to Ram, oh, that would be so nice. We could bring this deer back to Ayodhya. We could have it there. It's so beautiful. I've never seen anything like that. Get it for me. The goddess of fortune, who has everything, now wants something. It's interesting how this Leela plays itself out. And the point is here that attachment to material things causes so many calamities. So she was attached. So attached that she really encouraged Ram, and the deer ran away. And then Ram was asked by Sita, please go. And he did, as an obedient husband. He went to satisfy his qualified wife, who had left everything to be with him. And so Maricha ran real fast, but Ram left Lakshman there to guard Sita. And while they were gone, Maricha realized that he didn't have a chance, so he just called out to Lakshman in Ram's name, using his voice, to ask for help. When Sita heard that, she told Lakshman, "You go and help him." And Lakshman said, He doesn't need my help. My duty is to guard you. I can't leave you alone." Then she somehow or other, this is interesting, she starts to find fault with Lakshman. Now it says that Lakshman worshipped Sita as much as he worshipped Ram. So much so that it said he never even looked at her above her ankles. The wife of another man, not to even look at her. That's the ideal principle of when we chastity amongst what we say, those who are what we say senior. Ideally. He had so much respect for her that he worshipped her as much as he did. And he never wanted to do anything else but be a servant and assist. And now she's finding fault with him. Did it ever happen? Right? You try to do your service nicely and you get criticized. It does happen, right? Even if you have good intentions and something goes wrong, people don't see the intentions, they see the mistake. But in this case, you know, she was very, very strong. So much so that she actually said something that was so painful to the heart of Lakshman that he couldn't tolerate it. He was a Kshatriya. And now he was being criticized for something that was completely untrue. She said, "Now I understand your motivation. This whole, the whole reason why you're here is so you could be with me." Oh my God. It was the last thing that was on the level of truth. So Sita is acting in a way that is most unbecoming of her character and her nature. We can learn a lesson. What is that lesson? She's teaching that material attachments causes one to become what? Illusioned. And that illusion causes one to think and act in the wrong way. How dangerous the material. Srila Prabhupada explains that if you want to go back home, back to Godhead, one of the qualifications or one of the preliminary qualifications is you have to have no desire for anything in this world. Nothing. And there's one lecture, it's called A Pinch of Desire. Prabhupada says, if you have even the slightest little bit of desire to enjoy anything in this world, welcome back. Pretty heavy, right? When you think about it. So sometimes we think, well, I'll just wait till I'm ready to die and then I'll give it all up. It's too hard right now. I still got my plans. But it says that the process of purification is the process of always moving forward in freeing ourselves from whatever attachments or desires that may keep us in this material world for another birth. So any material attachments will cause calamity. And it's explained that even if there's a small material attachment, that small can again become great. It's just like if you don't put out a fire and you leave a little spark, that spark can again ignite into a bigger fire. If you're sick and you're trying to cure your disease, but you leave some there and you become a little, you know, self-assured that you're all right, that disease can return again. So these things, so Prabhupada uses that example. So Sita's teaching us the nature of material attachment. And how dangerous it is. We might say, well, it's innocent. There's nothing innocent about material attachments. It causes one to act and think in the wrong way. So, then Lakshman, being really insulted, but before he left, he made some provision just to try to protect her. Even though she was, you know, criticizing him and told him to leave, he was thinking, still thinking about her welfare. So he made an arrangement. Don't go outside of this. He took his bow and drew a circle. And he said, stay within that, that will protect you. And then he left. And then Ravana. Now Ravana, he's teaching us also. How did Ravana appear on the scene in order to abduct Sita? What was his appearance? He was a sadhu. He came as a holy man. And he came as a hungry holy man, right? And he came begging for food. Mataji, I haven't eaten in 3 days. Please give me some food. I'm hungry. He played on her soft heart and her inclination to, you know, give charity to holy people. Maya's like that. Maya can be very deceiving. That Maya can present themselves in a way that looks like it's Krishna. That's why we have a spiritual master. The spiritual master helps us to discern and understand what is the difference between what is beneficial for spiritual life and what is unbeneficial or taking us the other way. So, therefore, the disguises of Maya are many. Maya comes in two forms. One is those things that you don't want, and the other things is those things you want but you don't really need. Those are the harder ones. I'm filled up with prasadam, but here comes the pizza. Oh, I can't resist. I know I'm going to suffer tomorrow, but I don't care. Right? Dhritarashtra. What is Dhritarashtra? Dhritarashtra, in the Mahabharata, he had 100 sons. He knew his sons were wrong. They were envious and mischievous and malicious. But he was attached. He said, I know my sons are all, you know, wrong. But they're my sons. I'm attached to them. Attachment, material attachments, can cause, and the illusion of something being what it is, but it's actually something else. This is the material energy. So this Ramayan, the Lord is giving us so many amazing lessons. Hanuman, what did he teach us? He taught us that duty to superiors with unflinching faith and determination is the characteristics of a great person. He didn't care how difficult it was to find Sita. He was determined to find Sita. He was determined to find Sita. So much so that when it was revealed that Sita was in Lanka, he had the power to jump across the ocean. And while he was jumping across the ocean, one mountain, Mount Mainda, appeared from within the ocean and said, hey, Hanumanji, you know, you're a devotee and I'm here to serve devotees, Vaishnav Seva. So take some rest on my mountain. It's got some nice fruits, you know, you're a bunkie, bananas, so many nice things. Nice place to rest. There's even a health spa here and so many nice things. And so, you know, alluring, trying to allure in a very devotional way. Hanuman said, thank you, but I got some seva to do. So this point, Hanuman is teaching us that many times the perks that one may get from doing devotional service can distract one from their service. Make sense? Too much opulence and too little are both deficiencies, or what we say, difficulties that cause devotional service to be difficult. If you have too much, no time, and get distraction. If you have too little, then you're struggling to maintain. Right? So Hanuman was teaching that instructions of the spiritual master becomes what we say, yasya devi para bhaktir, yata devi tata guru, tasyaita katite yarta prakasanatman mahatmanaha. That the instructions of the spiritual master become the life and soul of the devotee. It becomes their footsteps. Shiguru, what is that? Shiguru charani rate. The line before that. Guru mukha padma vakya chite te kuriya akya. That the instructions of the spiritual master, these are my food. This is my substance. This is my nourishment. Anakadira manias. I'm fixed. That's what Hanuman's teaching us, that that he went through such difficulty, so much so, just to serve the Lord, so many things. He never considered if it was easy or hard. Prabhupada explains that. This is the success in spiritual life. What is that success? That the orders of the spiritual master becomes the life and soul of the devotee, and it doesn't matter whether it's easy or hard. In fact, when it's hard, it's an offering that we can make. When it's easy, we should do it anyway. But difficulties, Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually explains in a very rhetorical way. He's explaining, what are my happinesses in devotional service? And he goes through many things, and then he finally ends the song by saying, my happiness is the difficulties that I can encounter in your devotional service. Nobody wants difficulties, but he's saying this is my happiness. Amazing when we think about it. And you don't have to look for difficulties. Kali Yuga is full of them. Right? But those difficulties, when they become impediments to our devotional service, then we're seeing those difficulties in the wrong way. They should be opportunities in order to surrender more and to purify our heart. Difficulties. So it says that there was one Olympic runner. She said, difficulties come only to the chosen few. Right? She was thinking that difficulties are actually benedictions. I mean, look at Prabhupada. What difficulties he had. But he's glorified for that. And he didn't have to get these difficulties in order to be glorious. He was already glorious. But the glory was what was exposed to the entire universe by him accepting these difficulties as service to his spiritual master. So, a devotee wants to serve in any and all conditions. And then the Ramayana is just full of difficulties. Everybody's put into difficult situation, right? Is there anybody there who wasn't? Kaikeyi, Mantara, Bart. Bart had to, he had a, Ram told him, rule the kingdom in my absence. He said, I don't want to. My mother cheated us. I don't want to go back to Ayodhya. I don't want to be with them. I want to be with you in the forest. And Ram said, go back. And he did. Reluctantly, but out of obedience to Ram, who was his young older brother. But when he went back, he didn't go to Ayodhya. He took Ram's sandals, which Ram gave him. He put him on the throne, and he stayed in a place called Nandagraha, which is nearby. We went to Ayodhya in 1999. We visited there on Yatra. And we went to the place where Bart lived for 14 years. It's just a little grove. There's a little shrine there. There's a pond that's covered with lily pads. He stayed there for 14 years. And what did he do? He lived on cow urine. He lived on barley cooked in cow urine. That's all he ate for 14 years and had matted hair. He didn't want to rule the kingdom. He did it proxy rule. He ruled from a distance as a representative, but never went into Ayodhya. How difficult was him? But he did it. because that was the instructions of Ram. And we see how the Ramayana is just so full of so much difficulty. So many difficulties. Vibhishan, look at his difficulties. He was pious. He was benedicted with piety in his whole life. And he had to be born in a family of Rakshasas. And he, but because he was in that family, he did his best to help his brother to understand what is value, what is truth. Although he was known as a Rakshasa, he had none of the qualities of a Rakshasa. He was pious. He was religious. And so he had to suffer so much being in the association of his nefarious brother, who almost killed him a couple times for giving good advice. You look at the Ramayana, it's like one thing after another. And it, you know, like, you know, you go to a movie and it's somehow or other at the end of the movie, happy ever after. The hero wins and the girl's there and everybody's happy and there's a big party. And not the Ramayana. It just ends where Sita is banished and she goes to the Valmiki. And then Ram, you know, he leaves. And then, you know, her two sons were born and they coming back to Ayodhya and they don't even know their father. And there's some criticism about him also. It's like one thing after another. It's a treatise on the material world. That in this material world, don't try to make a nice arrangement. That's the way the material world works. It just doesn't work. Every time you try to make a nice arrangement, there's another person making that arrangement differently. They're rearranging your arrangement. It's called material energy. So a devotee doesn't try to make a nice arrangement. Devotee tries to somehow remember the Lord in each and every circumstance. And that's what Ramayana is teaching us. Despite all this, live by religious principles and somehow remember the Lord. And that is the success of one's devotional life. Nice arrangements are in the spiritual world. You get those after a while. So sometimes we use the motto. Sometimes people come to me and say, Maharaj, this went wrong, that went wrong, this didn't happen, she said this, this, that. I said, if you want to live by a certain principle of practicality, live by this one principle. Expect the best, no, hope for the best and expect the worst. Sounds pretty pessimistic, doesn't it? Hope for the best, well, that's good, but expect the worst. It's just the way things are. That's the way the material world works. And if things come out nice, then it's wonderful. And if they don't, there's no disappointment because you expected it. Right? That's just the way. So the Ramayana is teaching us so many, many valuable lessons about how to live life in this world. What is ideal and what is less than ideal. And look at Ravana. Ravana had everything. Everything material. But never satisfied. Never satisfied. So we can learn so much from this wonderful, wonderful pastimes. But what we really can learn is to go deeper into our relationship with the Lord. Because when we hear these leelas over and over again, the heart becomes purified. The glories of devotional service become enhanced within our hearts. Because just to hear about the Lord's pastimes is satam prasangam mama virya sambidam. Bhavanti Hiritkarna Rasayana Katha. To hear the glories of the Lord is actually the highest form of spiritual worship because it purifies the heart, it awakens love for the Lord, and it makes the mind and heart become fully satisfied. Satisfaction. There is where, that's why we glorify the Lord on these days. I was thinking, just like last year, I was here last year for Ramayana, for Ram's appearance day. Actually, this is one of my favorite places to come for this particular holy day, because the deities here are so powerful and so, what we say, to use a very simple word, they're so there. They're really there. And I see, and when I think of Ram, wherever I am, I always think of Ramchandra and Bhaktivedanta Manor. And last year, I was thinking, I'm going to read the Ramayana on Ram's appearance day. So I just kind of hid away for a few days, and I read the whole thing. And I was thinking, this is amazing. It's like I read it for the first time. And it was so wonderful. What's wonderful about it is that there's never a boring moment. It's so full of adventure and excitement. You can't go to any movie that can compare to the Ramayana. They probably can't even make a movie like that. It would be a bad imitation. It's full of adventure. It's full of intrigue. It's full of everything you're looking for in life in the most amazing way. So if we absorb ourselves in hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, then the Lord awakens within our heart. And when the Lord awakens within our heart, then we have achieved success in life. So here's the opportunity. So this is one of the most, what we say, wonderful appearances of the Lord. The Lord appears in so many incarnations of himself. And we might say that of all the incarnations of the Lord, Ramchandra is the most popular. Am I right? Even more popular than Krishna. It was because of Srila Prabhupada that Krishna's become popular now. But generally in the world, when people think of the Lord coming from the area of India, they always think of Lord Ram. Krishna's there, but Ram is more glorified. In fact, the Ramayana is in so many languages outside of India. So many cultures also have the same scripture and different manifestations of itself in the local languages of different places throughout Southeast Asia. So many people hear about and glorify Ram because he represents what is ideal in life. He represents what is ideal: the ideal husband, the ideal king, the ideal son, the ideal in, what we say, victory, right? Another thing that Ram was teaching: how did Ram kill Ravana? He couldn't kill him, right? He kept shooting arrows. And he couldn't figure out how to kill Ravana. And he kept shooting arrows, and Ravana's heads were falling to the ground. And every time a head would fall, because he had this power to generate another head, he was the way he was. Nothing was changing. So it was Vibhishan who told him, you got to shoot him in the heart. That's where his power is. And then, so he took instruction. The Lord took instruction from someone else. And not only did he took instructions from someone else, he took help from a Muni, Agastya Muni. It was Agastya Muni who gave him the arrow that was the arrow that eventually was used to destroy Ravana. So what this message is, that you need the guru also. Ram is teaching that as an ideal devotee, one should take help from the spiritual people. He took help from Agastya Muni, who was a great Muni, and then Muni gave him that arrow. And then Ram used that arrow. So it's the arrow of the spiritual master's instructions, which is the power of spiritual victory. It destroys all illusions and brings about, what we say, victory, or Ram Raj, like that. So it's amazing how Ram was teaching so many amazing, amazing qualities, both as the Supreme Lord and as an ordinary person like that. So, wonderful opportunity to hear about, to glorify the Lord, and to worship the Lord. So, I'm supposed to end by 10 o'clock. I think there's something else. But let's see if there's anyone who would like to ask any questions or comments.